Hello, everybody. Today is the 12th of July, 2013. And we are beginning with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 116. We're on page 430. And we've been talking about the significance of light in terms of the growth of humanity and the growth of this planet. The significance and approach, we said, or the Tibetan said, can be summed up in the following stanzas from the old commentary, which, if studied carefully, will throw much light upon the theme of this particular subject. So let us see if we can at least make some interpretation of these stanzas from the old commentary. The sevenfold light of the Father brought from chaos into the ordered day his purpose and his plan. We're talking about the cosmic Manu here. We're talking about the Lord of the constellation of the Great Bear. And we know that the principle of organization is powerful in both the first ray and the seventh ray, order from chaos, O pilgrim on the way of death. This is the way for you. It is said of the first ray monadic type. So directing all of this threefold process in relation to the three constellations is the cosmic Manu, the Lord of the first ray, working through the seven head centers of the one about whom naught may be said, which are the seven major stars of the Great Bear. It's difficult to say with Alcor or Mizar which is the major star there. I'm sure that could be determined, but they are the two second ray stars and are a visual, well, they're a double, but you don't see them as a double, you see them as a single star. The seven supreme gods bent to this purpose, these are the rishis of the Great Bear, and with united will ordained the plan. And this is a plan within the ring pass knot of the one about whom naught may be said. We know how the head centers of the human being, probably within the head, or, well, possibly above the head and possibly both. But there are seven head centers which are ruled by Vulcan, and they are higher correspondences of the normal lower centers, in which I think sometimes the spleen is to be counted when looking at the normal seven centers, because it would be difficult to make the one of the seven head centers the master of the greatest of the head centers on top of the head. So there have to be seven lesser centers. And we have to question as well, will the Ajna center be included in these lower seven? When the disciple nears the portal, the greater seven must awaken and bring forth response from the lesser seven upon the double circle. The bear and the lion meet together and laid their plans. And if you look into space, of course, I suppose I should have one of those astronomy programs right now to show you, but as I said, just follow the cup of the Dipper, the Big Dipper, part of the Great Bear, in the direction in which it is pointing, and you will find the constellation of the Lion. So they are contiguous. They are closely positioned near each other in space, at least from the position as seen from the Earth. The bear and the lion meet together and laid their plans. And of course, when we're looking at the threefold constellations, the Great Bear Sirius and the Pleiades, and we descend in that sixfold vertical descent, the lion, the constellation of the lion, is the next one down from the bear. You do remember that, don't you? I suppose, you know, one would go back far enough to see it. But there it is, the Great Bear. And beneath it, next in descent, zodiacally considered, is the Lion. And of course, followed by Saturn, and then by Shambhala, and then by the head center, and then by the base of the spine. First, we're going to be dealing with the first ray line of descent. The Bear and the Lion met together and laid their plans in conformity with the plan and with the purpose of their controlling Lord. Now, who is that? And it seems pretty evident to me that we are dealing here with the one about whom naught may be said, which is our local super constellational logos, meaning that it's a constellation made up of constellations, and they are the centers in this great unknown being. And check page 293 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. They, the Bear and the Lion, together called on Father Time, which, as A.B. reminds us here, is Saturn, for aid and strength. And he responded to their triple call. Well, perhaps this has something to do with the three aspects of divinity, which are sub-aspects of the first aspect, which the two of them are wielding. And there will be, below Saturn, there will be three areas of application. One, Shambhala. One, the head center of the individual, and one, the base of the spine center of the individual. It's hard to believe, however, that between Shambhala and the individual, there are not also other areas of application that maybe DK has simply given us these to consider. To this call, likewise, the eternal, you see, the first three aspects of divinity are all triple. Maybe the other aspects of divinity are triple as well, making the 21, which together make the 22. But DK does say that the three aspects of divinity together, each one of the first three aspects, the others are attributes, are triple in their nature. So it seems that Saturn has been benevolent in many ways, and we've learned elsewhere in Cosmic Fire that he made a bridge across from the previous solar system to the present one, which was a line of escape, a kind of an antikorana for those who had clung too closely to the mother, which was the material nature of the previous solar system, and were to be, without his intervention, lost in her disintegration. There is a star somewhere, quite burnt out, and the location of which is unknown, but which is probably the vestige of the previous solar system, and it's a cosmic moon. And it has an effect upon our solar system, just like the moon, our moon, has an effect upon the Earth, and it's not a good effect. It's a disintegrative, corruptive effect. To this call likewise, the eternal youth responded in Shambhala, Sanatkumara, Lord of Shambhala. That is the fourth level of descent. He set himself anew to learn the plan. Somehow the solar level is left out of this, because Sanatkumara is the direct disciple of our solar logos, and our solar logos is not in this line of descent, but I don't see in a way why he shouldn't be, unless in some way he's repulsing the first ray energy, lest there be too much of it in his system, because he's working on a second ray expression. But then the second ray line of energy would have that, the Sirian line of energy would have this, the solar logos as part of the descent, and it doesn't. So you kind of wonder whether there's something missing. To this call, likewise, the eternal youth responded. He set himself anew to learn the plan, which is the plan of our solar logos and the greater plan of Leo, because after all, he is the king of Shambhala, and even of the one about whom naught may be said, well, of the great bear anyway, in which he is, to which he is related, to one star of which he is particularly related, whatever star that may be. Maybe it depends on what particular aspect of divinity Sanat Kumari is expressing at a particular time. Right now, it's the soul of the planetary locus which is emerging, so maybe the stars to which he is related are Alcor and Mizar. Maybe in the next solar system, when the Earth will still exist, and when some emanation of the planetary logos will come forth, will we call it Sanat Kumari? I don't know. The planetary logos, or whatever emanation that is, would relate more to Benetnash, Al-Kaid, the first star, the first ray star. He set himself anew to learn the plan, aided by Father Time, because after all, Sanat Kumari is the Ancient of Days, and in many ways relates to Capricorn. I think the three first ray signs have a lot to do with the nature of Sanat Kumari as Lord of Shambhala, because he is the youth of endless summers, so he springs ever new, and all that he does is new. This is Aries. He is the king of Shambhala, that's Leo, and he's the Ancient of Days, that's Capricorn and Saturn. Aided by Father Time, yet unaffected by the Lord of Time, at least by the lower level of it, which makes one subject to the illusion of time and space, for he himself was timeless, and that's a state of consciousness which realizes infinity and the negligibility. I like to call it the ultimate negligibility of any definite unit of time. For he himself was timeless, as are the greater lords, because they have realized the beginninglessness and endlessness of all things and the dwarfing to an ultimate negligibility of any definite unit of time. He was timeless, though not the lives which he enfolded in his thought and plan. He was the entering God, to whom and for whom the lesser lives cried forth, as they needed the glory of an entering God, and at least for the planetary logos, there was disappointment in that respect, because he sought not this, as it is said. Then the triple light, which came from the bear in his high place, I suppose the three aspects of the first aspect, or maybe we can look at it this way, dividing these, the triple light which came from the bear in his high place, from Leo in his lesser place, and from Saturn in his little place. And imagine calling Saturn's place little. What a huge cosmic perspective we're dealing with here. Even the great constellation Leo is relegated to having a lesser place. Then the triple light which came from the bear in his high place, from Leo in his lesser place, and from Saturn in his little place, poured into the planetary place of power, perhaps under the law of assembly by which the needed energies are gathered in Shambhala. Shambhala was informed by these lights. The Lord of Life and of the world took action, and that is Sanat Kumari, inspired by the greater triple light, because any emanation coming from any great source can be expressed in terms of light, and that's sort of what we've been looking at here. The progress of our planetary locus is understood in terms largely of light, and so it is, excuse me, don't drink tea that has milk in it, sorry, and human progress and its history of progress is expressed in terms of light. The little one within the greater whole, and that is the individual human disciple, AAB, and she clarifies these matters for us, but probably in a way the Tibetan has been quite clear, and maybe we would grasp this ourselves perhaps, likewise responded to the triple light, but not until the cycles passed and passed again. In other words, how long does it take a human being to recognize the true power of Saturn, the true nature of Leo in its higher aspects, unitive aspect and oneness aspect, and even the rays of the Great Bear? How long does it take in the millions of years of human evolution before he recognizes? And those cycles are root races and their sub-races, and all the ray cycles, and platonic years, and revolutions of our sun and related stars around the Pleiades, assuming that exists, which occultism says it does. So, not until the cycles passed and passed again, late in the day of time, at least as far as the human being is concerned, Shambhala sent a call, because, you know, at first we evolved through fire by friction. Shambhala leaves us alone. Even when we're evolving as a soul, Shambhala is only latent, and only toward the third initiation, maybe between the second and third, when the will is being cultivated, Shambhala sends a call, relayed from voice to voice, hierarchically arranged, one of those voices being the voice of the solar angel and soul, I suppose, and rolling forward on the Om, because indeed the Om, and not just the O, is sounded forth from Shambhala, as we have learned in some of the rules, the 14 rules. The Om is as it is sounded forth by him who stands and waits at the very center of the council chamber of the Lord. The disciple, hearing that sound, shambolic sound, lifted his head, and the head is the occult area, and the head center, the place where such energies impact, and reorients himself towards this descent of energy, lifted his head, and became responsive to the Om, not just as it is sounded forth by the soul, but as it is sounded forth from the very center of the council chamber of the Lord. Rule 10 and Rule 13 both deal with this word or Om from Shambhala. The disciple, hearing that sound, lifted his head, an impulse from the base mounted up, because when there is stimulation of the purpose-based head center, there is a reciprocal response of the personal individual will at the base of the spine. An impulse from the base mounted in time and space, clarifying, purifying, burning away hindrance, Leo within the heart and head, because Leo rules the dome of the head as well as the heart, shouted aloud, the rampant lion, is it not so? You can imagine the lion roaring. I was once in a zoo. No, not as an inmate, but actually as a visitor. And I was close enough to a lion behind some kind of plexiglass barrier. And this lion decided to roar. It is a tremendous sound. I suppose utterly terrifying. It would mean death unless the barrier were there. The power of it was immense. I just stood transfixed listening to this rolling roar of sound. And one can understand why the symbol of strength so much is the rampant lion. So an impulse from the base mounted in time and space. Leo within the heart and head shouted aloud, and stood, the rampant lion, indeed, the symbol of a great will. While Saturn did his work as he always does, because Saturn is the planet of work, as the third ray, in many ways, is the ray of work, working out through all the rays of attribute. And thus the twain were one, that which is above, that which is below, the head center of purpose and the base of the spine of will were united. And there is a kind of consummation along that line which occurs at the fifth initiation, when the base of the spine, is truly the center of focus and import. Amazing, isn't it, that at that high initiation, when one would imagine that the chakras had disappeared, or at least that the lower form had disappeared, because at the fourth degree they might be destroyed, that at that initiation, the base of the spine is the major center. Of course, you can take the fourth and fifth initiation in the same life and not die in the form and not relinquish the chakric system, and even a fourth degree initiate can create a Maya Virupa, in which case the chakras would be in whatever state they were when he took the fourth initiation, and then they could proceed further through his Maya Virupa. Why not? So we see how DK has read these ancient commentaries, translating them for us. Who knows what form they originally appeared in, you know, older than Egyptian life, and some of these things older than the stanzas of Zian, which are the basis of the secret doctrine. DK knows the chronology, the great history of the way in which the wisdom of Shambhala and hierarchy tried to make an impact upon humanity and correct the deviation from the good law which did occur early on. They have the great perspective. We, one day, will have that perspective, but our perspective is growing because we can read their works. And they offer us a sense of history which the average human being cannot grasp yet, or at least, let's call it like this, the human being who is not interested in these things and does not study them will not likely be able to grasp these things. Number two deals with the sixfold descent from Sirius, and you know how it goes by now. Sirius, Pisces, Uranus, hierarchy, heart center, solar plexus center. What Uranus is doing there, when most of its rays seem to be hardline rays, and it being the major first ray monad of our solar system, may be anyone's guess. I did guess earlier in some of these, and I think I gave some kind of explanation, which is probably better than anything I can think of right at this moment. But there is quite a similarity between those two half-moons, the polarities of Uranus, you know, and the sign Pisces. A part of the sign Pisces can be overlaid on Uranus, and there will be a conformity. And inasmuch as Uranus represents liberation, and Pisces does too, and Uranus represents the electric beat of the heart, or the impulse, which forces a rhythmic beating of the heart, and Pisces is so much connected with the heart, which is the monadic heart particularly, there are lines of connection which can be drawn. Number two, the central light of Sirius, central light, shone through the eye of the sun, S-O-N. Who is this sun? It seems like a high being. Is it the Son of God on some high level? Is Sirius to be considered, in a way, a Christ, a cosmic Christ, a son of a still greater Father? And it is, again, the central light, and not the highest light or the lowest light, so it seems to accord with the second aspect of divinity, which is between the two. But when we talk about the eye of the bull, we probably mean a specific star, and maybe there is some kind of location here, dealing as we are dealing with the eye of the sun. But Sirius is the sun, S-O-N, from a certain perspective. And the vision came. The vision is always connected with the second ray, sixth ray and the second ray, with Sagittarius, the sixth ray sign, with Taurus, the second sign. Those two signs are particularly signs of vision, and we know that the Pisces types have a great power of imagination, as they have the second and sixth ray constellationally transmitted through that constellation, second and sixth. The light of wisdom, as Sirius has that monastic blend, it's not only love. There's a strong fifth ray there too. And Sirius operates through maybe a planet called Isis, which then splits its emanation into three streams, which are Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. So wisdom will come forth as well. The light of wisdom penetrated into the waters. The waters can be represented by Pisces and cast the radiance of the heavens, for Uranus is the heavenly one, interestingly, into the depths of matter. Water and matter are equivalent. This is not an impulsive and impositional act. It is an attractive call. At this attractive call, the goddess rose unto the surface. The fish goddess, the symbol of Pisces, or the ruler of all the little fishes who have gone forth into matter. The very first of the mantrams of Pisces go forth into matter. So every emanation from the monad does go forth into matter. And once that emanation has reached quite a low point and has just begun to become a human being, the human being has to venture forth into material experience. Anyway, excuse me. The waters of space we are dealing with here. And from what level do these super constellations work? They are found on the cosmic mental plane and beyond. The Great Bear, I believe, there's indications on page 1162 of cosmic fire that the focus of the Great Bear should be cosmic Atma, that the focus of the Pleiades should be cosmic Buddhi, that the focus of Sirius is well established as cosmic mental, although there's a strong cosmic astral effect. So the waters are not only the waters of the dense, of the cosmic physical plane, but all of matter, even whatever matter is on those cosmic planes, are penetrated by the light of wisdom from at least the higher cosmic mental plane. The goddesses rose onto the surface, the goddess, not the fish goddesses, all the little ones, under her sponsorship. The goddess rose onto the surface and welcomed the light within the depths and grasped it as her own. So the interrelationship here between Sirius and Pisces, or between the Sirian system and Pisces, or between the sun Sirius and Pisces. She saw the sun. Having seen her sun, she was illumined, having seen the one who represents the second aspect of divinity, and from that day, the sun, S-U-N, has never left her. This is deeply occult. Light of the world, isn't that what Pisces is? The light of Pisces? Let's take a look here. I believe if we look around page 330 of Esoteric Astrology, we will see if Pisces, the light of the world, the utmost illumination, Venus, the planet of light, is exalted in Pisces. So there's a great and final luminosity in Pisces. She saw the sun of illumination, because after all, Sirius, like Venus, is the cosmic illuminator, Venus a lesser representation. And the sun aspect of God, so the sun aspect in a way of the one about whom naught may be said, and kind of a reflection in a way of Orion, if we look at Orion, as some do, as the one who expresses the second aspect of divinity within the one about whom naught may be said, a heart center, an illumined heart. Some disagree with that. But in any case, it is a very luminous source within the one about whom naught may be said, and allied to the cosmic Christ, which is the sun. And from that day, the sun illumination has never left her. So we're looking at the luminous relationship. If Venus is exalted in Pisces, is there not a higher type of exaltation in the relationship of Sirius, which is the higher octave of Venus, when Sirius and Pisces are related? There is no darkness, and this is what can be said of the second ray, and when the second and fifth ray combined, especially so. The fifth ray, the most luminous of the ray lords, and maybe the stellar systems which reflect the sixth ray or express the fifth ray, as does Sirius, will be the most luminous on that level. There is always light, and the second ray is the ray of light-bearing influence, so what we will be looking for is the way in which this second descending stream reveals and expresses the light. The whole description here is about different kinds of light, DK has told us. The triple light, the light of the Great Bear, the light of Leo, which expresses the will to illumine, the light of Saturn, even. There are going to be nine higher types of light here. By the first three factors, that kind of a scalene triangle consisting of a superconstellation, a zodiacal constellation, and a planet. 3 times 3, 9. And from that day, the sun has never left her. There is no darkness, there is always light, and from Sirius comes the great light of initiation as far as our solar system is concerned. We can always imagine our solar system must be, our solar logos must be some kind of recipient in this whole downward stream. And I wonder if, well, you know, as I begin to think about it, the sun veiling Uranus is a first-ray indication, but Uranus is in the second-ray stream. And yet Uranus is one of those planets that represents a great second-ray entity in our solar system, who is the second person of the Trinity, in my view. And Neptune is one of those, with Vulcan and Pluto, I think, who represents the first-ray entity, who is the first person of the Logoic Trinity. The beings that I'm talking about here, it's time to pull them up again. I usually have them ready to go, but not in this case. And here they are under Fellowship of Cosmic Fire and the AAB diagrams. And preview, and these beings are somewhere here. Maybe I better go back. These beings, the first, second, and third aspect, the first, second, and third persons of the Logoic Trinity, they sponsor, each of them, three planets of the of the 10 planets presently known. DK gives us this. The third person of the Trinity sponsors, I believe, Well, a great third-ray entity sponsors Saturn, Mars, and the Earth. And the second person of the Trinity sponsors, interestingly enough, Uranus, Jupiter, and Venus. So Uranus is connected there. But those third-ray beings, the second-ray beings of Jupiter and Venus. And then the, what do we have left of the planets known? We have Neptune, Lord of Dissolution. There is some first-ray of that. We have Vulcan and Pluto. Those are the ones that remain, and I think they are sponsored by the first person of the Logo Trinity. And then we would have Mercury interrelating all of this. So there is no darkness, there is always light. And, whoa. I thought this was really working, but maybe not. I'm looking over at my other computer, and the image is not changing. That's not so good, but I'll do my best to just continue here. And then the heavens within the ring pass not responded to the light from Sirius. We may be dealing here with the heavenly one, you know, when we talk about the heavens. My network connection has been lost on the other computer. Well, I'm having a little technical difficulty here. And at any point, this might cut off. If so, I'll do my best to salvage it and go on and see if I can see what the trouble is. But the Pisces-Sirius connection is very luminous, just as is the Pisces-Venus connection. So, as the heavens within the ring pass not responded to the light from Sirius, which passing through the sea of Pisces, which can even be in some ways the cosmic astral plane, lifted the fishes into the heavenly sphere. And this is not just the fish. This is the fishes. We are dealing here now with the souls, or with the individual units. Lifted the fishes into the heavenly sphere, and thus a triple light appeared. Again, a triple light. We've had that triple light in the first ray, and now we have the triple light as well in relation to the second ray. And thus a triple light appeared, the radiant sun of suns, that is Sirius, the sunshine of the greater sun, as we refer to it, the watery light of Pisces, and the heavenly light of Uranus, heavenly within reason. A triple light, and we know that Uranus, through electric fire and intuition, does greatly illuminate the sphere of consciousness. This light descended on the waiting sphere, and I suppose that is the Earth, and lit the galaxy of little lights upon the earth who are the human beings. What a way to refer to it, a galaxy of little lights. How interesting. A hierarchy of light emerged from its own place, and the planet was a light. It's as if the members of the hierarchy have been stimulated by the awakener Uranus, and by this triple light, the watery light and the radiance of the sun of suns. And then the heavens within the ring pass not responded to the light from Sirius, which passing through the sea of Pisces, all of matter, but also the cosmic astral plane, because Sirius is cosmic mental in its focus, you kind of wonder where the zodiacal lords are found. Where is their particular focus? Lifted the fishes, maybe all the beings within the sphere of Pisces, No, not that. Lifted the little ones into the heavenly sphere where they could become awakened, and thus a lesser triple light appeared. Lesser, perhaps, than the great light of Sirius. The radiant sun of suns, as much as it could be experienced, the watery light of Pisces and the heavenly light of Uranus. The light descended on the waiting sphere, which is the earth, and lit the galaxy of little lights upon the earth, those who could respond. And under that principle of illumination, redemption, upliftment, awakening, a hierarchy of light emerged from its own place. And the planet was a light because the hierarchy of light existed. Aha, okay. Well, that is shorter, and it relates to, particularly to the descent of the second grouping. The second ray, Sirius, Pisces, Uranus, the hierarchy itself, and then the heart and the solar plexus, because they were drawn upward through aspiration to reach the heavenly sphere, to reach the cosmic astral, cosmic etheric planes where Uranus rules. Now, before this program quits on me, I would very much like to I think the only thing I can do, yeah, there we go. I have two computers running, and they're both on the same wireless. Anyway, let's see if we can get through this one before the crash comes. The little one upon that little world responded slowly to that light. Ah, no, this is the continuation. This is the continuation, even though it comes under the Roman numeral 3. So the little one upon that little world, who, that is the human being, and the earth is certainly the little world, responded slowly to the light until today. The little world of men begins to throb in rhythmic unison. And there's rhythm. There is Uranus again, at first very chaotic, but eventually very rhythmic, having the first, and having the first ray, and also the seventh ray of rhythm. I'm going to do my best here. Okay. Changes are wrought. The cosmic heart. Sorry for that little delay here. It's like guiding a boat, and it's heading for the rocks. Oh, my. Changes are wrought. The cosmic heart. The heart systemic. Ah, now, this time, the sun is included. The cosmic heart. The heart systemic, which is, I suppose, our solar god, and the little heart of man begin to beat as one, and as this beat pulsates with greater strength, it blends a lower note, and AAB tells us that's the solar plexus. So, we have here the cosmic heart can be considered to be the heart of the cosmic Christ, which is Sirius, the heart systemic, the sun. Uranus is having something to do with the beat of the heart. The little heart of man, as the heart of man reflects our sun, the solar logos, and there's a blended beating, you know, if you read the law of healing about the three, thus the three whose number is a 12 respond to the greater 12. There's a line of heart centers, all reinforcing each other. It blends with the lower note within itself, removes its harshness, as the Martian quality of the solar plexus can be very harsh, and its note of fear, those two satellites, are they Deimos and Phobos, something like that, of Mars, fear and terror, fear and hatred, something of that nature. And thus ends its illusion, ends the illusion of the solar plexus. And then again, the two are one. And there is a blending of the heart and solar plexus. Okay. So, this has been maybe just a little bit interrupted by the technical difficulties, but I think we can see how the human being responds and how there is a rhythmic unison in this descent of heart centers and how Uranus is connected with this pulse, the pulse of life. It is also Vulcan, which has this steady and rhythmic beat. If you think about the relationship of Uranus and the Sun can veil Vulcan, the Sun can veil Uranus. The beating of the heart is a Uranian, Vulcanian, solar thing. And it works in that way. The cosmic heart and the heart systemic, this is Sirius and our Sun, and the little heart of man, through the mediation of Pisces and Uranus, begin to beat as one. And then one responds in his own heart center to the cosmic pulse. It reminds me of Dane Rudyard's book, The Pulse of Life. And this beat pulsates with greater strength. It blends the lower note. It entrains it. It calls it into being. And removes its harshness and its note of fear. It removes the Martian quality. And, you know, then maybe Venus takes over, because Venus, after all, interestingly, I think is closely associated with the heart, with the solar plexus center of our solar logos. Not only its heart center, but the solar plexus center at this time. And then again, the two are one. Well, friends, I feel obliged, even though the time has not quite come, to end this program, maybe some 12 minutes or so ahead, and see if I can straighten out the problem which is existing. There does seem to be a problem with the audio connection, and I'm trust that you are, I hope that you are hearing it. So I'd like to take up the Pleiades in a little while, even though I hope to do these all as a unit. But what I will do then is attempt to start a program once again and see if something can be done. We are journeying into the old commentary, and it is problematic. We're never sure of our interpretation, but with DK's interpretation, we see what he was working from, and we can begin to see the connections as well. So, let us leave it at that, and this will be the end. End of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 116. It's an A, but we're not going on to a B. And we're on page 432. And we'll beginning Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 117A, 432, and we'll work with the Pleiades. Okay. Sorry for this interruption, but I hope some sense came out of it. When I look at that, the harshness and fear are so Martian, and yet the heart is ruled by Jupiter and by the Sun. And so when the heart begins to pulsate in line with the cosmic heart of Sirius in the initiatory process, the strident note of the solar plexus is overcome. If you want to see stridency, just look at the sixth ray religions today and their strident screaming about their exclusive hold on truth. That is Martian stridency, and that can be overcome. Okay, I hope to see you soon with a little better technical situation. See you soon.